Well, good evening, everyone. Social media and social technologies are undoubtedly have shown themselves to be a disruptive phenomenon. They've been enabled by the layers of technology such as the internet and digital devices. And they come into their own truly when considered in the environment of mobile. So the way in which smartphones are now used with social media to give continual on-the-spot connectivity is really changing the way in that a lot of things happen. Now, one of the big dangers of talking about social media is you can very quickly descend into a statistics list because the numbers are truly phenomenal. Let me save a lot of time by telling you that the numbers are massive and they're growing very fast, and that's really all you need to know. Obviously, many of you are familiar at some level with things like Facebook and Twitter, and we can have large debates about whether Facebook is worth $31 or not, but for the good of my sanity and my soul, I'm not actually an investment banker, so I don't really know the answer, but I can tell you that that's a company that is going to be worth a lot of money in the future. So it's obvious when we think about social media that what we've got here is a new communications channel. It's rather different to many of the communication channels that we've had in the past, in that it is interactive. It is one to many. So, for example, the telephone generally isn't used commonly in that form. But I think the important thing, perhaps for an audience of a certain age, is to understand that people really have a very weak understanding of it unless you're immersed in it. And this was quite a shock to me, because working into the technology world, I thought I was up on all of this kind of stuff, and that you know, I had some idea of what these things were. But the reality is, when you actually look at how some age groups, and here I'm particularly thinking of between 15 and 25, are using this technology, it really is starting to diverge from the world that you and I know. And perhaps the most interesting statistic is when one looks not at users or how often people come to a site, but minutes of the day. And the constraint that we have in the modern world is minutes of the day. And I sit on the board of the BBC, and we get lots of analysis of how many people are watching our television programs and for how long and how many people are going to the website. And the thing that strikes you about social media like Facebook is the stunning leap in minutes of the day. So although you would think that something like the BBC website would have lots of stories on it, people would go there and they would read them and they would watch video, and so you would think that would be the kind of website that would score well in terms of minutes of the day that a user spends on it, it comes nowhere near what a Facebook user would actually spend on the Facebook site. So the question is, what are they doing all that time? Well, to understand the difference here, I'm going to do a little experiment. There's a word, nom, N-O-M, and I'd just like a show of hands for anyone that thinks they know what nom means. Now, the good news is that quite often I get no show of hands, so this is a good diverse audience. What nom means is it means good to eat. And the way in which it came about was there is a viral video of a hamster eating something that went around the internet, and someone wrote nom, nom, nom under it. Now, the reason this is important is we had probably about six people put their hands up there. If I was a gathering of people who were under 25, we would have almost complete recognition of that term. So what we've got is a piece of terminology which, in the cutoff between 25 and 30, completely flips in understanding. So you go from about 100% recognition of that term, under 25, to about 100% non-recognition of the term over 30. And what this means is we are seeing very strong subcultures. Now, you see crossover. So, for example, there is actually now an ad that goes on the side of a bus for Ritz crackers that has the wheels on the bus go nom, nom, nom. But the interesting thing about that is that's a piece of advertising which falls completely flat for anyone over 30, but is still worth, presumably, the advertising agency putting that up. So we have a situation where we have a very different culture going on and very different communication. Another little thing I advise you to do is next time you're in a queue, perhaps getting a coffee at Starbucks or something, look down the queue. And these days, if the queue's more than about 10 people, you will see someone on a smartphone, and they will be doing one of two things. They will be checking a message or an email, or the other thing is they will be flicking through Facebook. And what that Facebook thing they're flicking through is notifications from their friends. And the thing that's very hard to understand is why you would want to do this for someone my age, because the notification that will suddenly appear using all this vast technology and digital processing power that I spent years, along with many other people, trying to make work, is that Heather's just bought a donut. And then there will be some commentary about the fact that Heather's bought a donut and zapped across the ether. But what you've got is this constant presence going on now among these groups, even when they're separated. So what we have is an extremely powerful effect. It's going off in ways that are almost difficult for people who are not part of that generation to understand. And so the first thing here is we have a certain group now who are spending minutes in these communication channels and much less in traditional ones like linear television. And when it comes to reading newspapers, I'm afraid falling even faster. So we have a way of reaching very hard to reach groups, particularly for government. And it works very well. You know, Birmingham City Council has 70,000 followers on Twitter. You can actually get a message out in doing that. If we want to reach that group and we want to make them part of democracy and we want to involve them in the democratic process, then because of the fact that the minutes are being allocated by them in this way, it's going to become very important for democracy that social media is embraced by the political process. And what, of course, we're seeing now is, especially in the US, where President Obama has used it to raise a lot of money, politicians are realizing that they have to listen and they have to talk through social media. And, of course, the big advantage of this is you do get feedback. Now, there is a danger that you get disproportionately weighted feedback, but that's always been an issue with politicians and lobbying. Other big issues that arise are around legal and regulation. We have the concept of laws that apply to public spaces. Well, social media is a virtual public space. Therefore, interactions happen between people on there. How should the law be applied? And the law is very confused in this area. One can find multiple contradictory rulings about what is considered private and what is considered public. And one would argue that the law is almost impotent when it comes to dealing with Twitter, for example, which we've seen with recent injunctions around celebrities. So the old model of being able to injunct, keep information under control, and deal with libel is becoming extremely difficult. It is quite possible with relatively little effort to make it impossible to trace you if you make statements on these devices. And so the idea of accountability for what's said has gone. We have a whole series of regulatory issues. If you think of this as a new communications medium, then it is being used by, for example, corporates that interact with members of public. So, for example, financial services may well now be marketed over social media. We've certainly seen issues around drug companies promoting off-label use of their products through social media. And so we have to apply the same principles there of regulation. But obviously the volumes here mean that the traditional models of doing this become very, very difficult. Whilst we could monitor television and see the drug company had put out an inappropriate advertisement, seeing that in social media interaction can be much, much harder. We then come on to the issue of crime and intelligence. Social media is not only a communication tool that criminals or terrorists might use, but it's actually an incredibly efficient one because it has the ability to do one-to-many. It has the ability to send many types of information, and it has the ability to send information in ways that are particularly difficult to be understood and at speed, which is very difficult to deal with. So if you think back to AD 500, and you had the Nika riots. Well, the reason that you could have a riot in those days was that everyone was at the Hippodrome and it got a bit hot and they didn't like the show and they had a riot and they went and attacked the public buildings. Well, because of social media, you don't have to have people in one place for that process to happen. It can diffuse, and we saw that, and it can diffuse very rapidly and be very coordinated. And, of course, we saw that sort of effect with the London riots. And the ability of a government to respond and the police force to respond to that kind of speed is very difficult. Now, that speed can have advantages and disadvantages. So many people would look at coverage of the Arab Spring and the speed with which the organisation of the revolt occurred through social media and think of that as a very good thing. However, what we're seeing is decisions that are made often very quickly without the ability to perhaps have a debate or put information in there. And one really powerful thing that you see with social media now is its ability to control traditional media. So one of the most interesting things you see in the coverage of the Arab Spring is someone holding up a card to an Al Jazeera television camera with a Twitter hashtag on it. So what happened at that point was by using traditional media, you actually managed to get a communication channel open using these new social media means. And we're seeing this effect all the time. We're starting to see, for example, in political debate, real-time feedback from Twitter coming in and presumably actually even affecting the debate in real time. So this is not an isolated thing. It is going to interact with traditional media and change the processes around it. Where is all of this going? Well, I think the important thing is that one can get very excited and very positive about social media. One can think about transparency. You can think about democracy. You can think about the overthrow of dictators. But like a lot of these things, there's actually another side to it. Many people in the civil liberties arena would worry about Big Brother. They worry about governments, for example, infringing their privacy, listening into things, assembling information about them. And the reason they worry about governments is up until now, it's only been governments really that have had the resources to do that. Social media is going to change all of that. It's going to be possible for Little Brother to do this sort of thing. And whilst we may be worried about governments doing that, we may have a lot to worry about Little Brother doing it. So a group like the English Defence League can actually organise through social media. But we have a new wave of technologies coming that allow information to be understood. And when you combine that with social media, it really changes what groups can do. Very simple example is there's now an iPhone app that uses your iPhone, put it in your pocket, and it will read the license plates of all the cars going past you on the street or that you walk past. That's quite scary. But as soon as you connect that to Facebook, and you have a group of like-minded individuals walking around a city, what it means is any group of a reasonable number of people can track all the vehicles moving around the city. And so what you now have is the kind of surveillance thing that we worry about from a government, but potentially in the hands of any group with any motivation. We're getting to the point where you're starting to see these smart devices being able to do facial recognition. Now, imagine if you're hanging anyone passing a street, a building, can take out a smartphone and recognize someone and be told who they are. How can you ever have a clandestine meeting? And the reason that's important is that although we like transparency, transparency can get in the way of some very important political processes. Could the Good Friday Agreement have ever got going if the relevant sides had known that their people were entering into discussion? Probably not. But we're going to be in a world where it's going to be very difficult for people to actually do these things because of the power of social media to connect the information together in groupings. So the important thing here is we have to look at both the positive side of the ability to interact along large groups and large information. But it's very important not to get carried away and realise that there is a strong negative side that we're also going to have to deal with. And the government is going to have to address these issues in terms of how it can respond to the rapid pace of what can happen in a social media-enabled world. It's going to have to think about the new types of crime that can occur in this world. And it's going to have to think about legal and regulatory. On the other hand, it's going to have a phenomenal opportunity to communicate with the electorate, to hear their views, to get feedback. And perhaps if we can move into a world where social media is used with a little bit more care, to actually educate and give people facts, which means that democracy can function in a more efficient manner. So I know we've now got some excellent speakers to listen to. They'll go into some more depth in some of those things. But I think we are facing really quite a fundamental phenomenon. And of course, the one thing about 25-year-olds is as the years go by, they become 35-year-olds and 45-year-olds. And so what we're going to see is the practices that they've inherited now will start to move through the population as we move forward. And they're going to become more and more part of how things actually get done. Thank you very much.